And here are your hosts, Shanae and Katrina.
Welcome, everybody, to our first podcast of The Bookies. Katrina and I will be taking you through multiple segments as we progress through the weeks. Hopefully you'll stay with us and join us and ask us as many questions as you like, because we are here to help you navigate your way from writing a book to publishing a book. Good morning, Katrina.
Morning. I love the intro. Here's the sexy man with a deep voice.
Believe it or not, that's Ethan McCaffrey. And you know, every time I hear his voice, it reminds me when I'm reading a book, when someone writes that raspy voice or that deep, hollow voice emanating from behind you.
And what do you think he'd say, having the readers think of him like that? Didn't he write the music to your song for The Love Mentalist?
I think he would say thank you. And yes, he did write the torch song for my book two of The Love Mentalist. And actually, we want to record it. So if anyone has any contacts to James Blunt, please let us know.
Setting your stakes high.
Oh, well, what else do I have to lose? Anyway, check in with us. Because we'll keep you updated on a weekly basis to let you know whether we've made contact. So as we progress over the weeks, we'll have many interviews with authors, agents and readers. And Katrina has a lot of fun segments too. Now, I'll let you know straight up, we don't mean to offend anyone, but sometimes our Aussie slang can be taken the wrong way.
Yes, so we apologise up front. I'll be choosing snippets of the week from things that I see on social media from authors, both self-published and independent authors, to traditional authors. Any connections that I have also, anything that is of a discrepancy on social media, I would touch on those throughout the weeks as well.
Good to hear. Do you know what? I've been playing around on Facebook lately and it's a whole different world out there.
Yeah, I know. It's a world of its own, isn't it?
They have so many groups, so many forums, but the thing that annoys me is that if people have got haven't got anything nice to say, why bother commenting if they're going to say something smart even that isn't relevant to the question being asked? The questions may seem stupid to them, but we all started off asking the same questions.
Absolutely. Did you also know, Shanae, that Facebook has a hidden section to it, that in the groups you can actually, and it does cost a little bit of money, I think it's like $5 a month or something, and it's a hidden feature, and you can join the groups where you can meet other authors or you can mentor people who are new to writing, or if you have, you need to be mentored, it is also good for that as well. But it is a hidden feature, and if you're in the groups, generally there's always somebody that will invite you to the other section to it, which is that hidden part of it.
Oh, that's interesting. I haven't found that group yet. But as you know, I was mentored by J.D. Edwards, who brought out a wonderful book called Indomitable, and apparently it's doing wonderful sales. And last time I heard, he was writing a screenplay for it. So we'll have to get him on the show and find out what's happening with him in a couple of weeks.
Oh, wow. Good for him. Congratulations to him.
Yeah, I know. He helped me improve my writing to the point where I was actually picked up by a publisher. And it was nice to have that person behind you helping you and pointing out your mistakes. Now, he was brutally honest, which is what I asked for. And I find a lot of people can't take criticism. And I'm one of them, to tell you the truth. But there's a lot of writers out there who think what they've written is perfect and doesn't need changing. And they ask, why should I change this? Why should I do that? Because someone told me to.
Look, healthy criticism is always good, and it helps progression.
It's true. I found it improved my writing. So as writers, are you willing to take criticism on the chin by someone more experienced and accept that what you have written might not be as perfect as what you think?
That's true. And I agree with that. But that's how you, and that's how you progress as a writer. Anything where it comes to publishing as well, because when you get to that finished product, if you've had no criticism along the way, how do you grow?
Well, that's exactly right. And there's wonderful editors and proofreaders on Twitter and Facebook.
Yeah, there are.
You know, I had a huge problem with data dumping, and one agent told me I was even head hopping. So I actually thought it was Omniscient Views, but apparently not. But what she didn't like, another one liked.
Yeah, because you can't please everybody. And the greatest thing about having those connections and places that where you connect on Twitter or Facebook is that some people just can't afford to pay for the editing. So that just helps. They can't afford the prices, especially in this economy. So it's a way to progress as a writer, as well as getting your book out there without having to hit the pocket as hard as what it usually is.
It is. And, you know, I find people can't afford to pay for editing and others don't want to pay for editing. But at the end of the day, even if you get them to edit the first three chapters of a book, you can see what mistakes you might be making over and over again. Like, as I said, mine was data dumping. And, you know, the other day on Twitter, I saw someone crowdfunding for $38,000 to have their book professionally edited and published.
And crowdfunding for people like me that don't know what that means?
Crowdfunding is where you ask people to donate to your cause.
Okay, now I'm with you.
It's just like a donation, but the thing is that at the end of the day, we don't know whether the book we are funding is going to be good enough to sell. And when it's published, will people actually buy it? In the meantime, who supports the other 5,000 writers who can't afford to publish and are struggling to have their book edited and polished to be published?
That's a fair point. And also, if you contribute to the crowdfunding, what do you get from it? Or is it just a donation and you don't know where the money goes?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, sometimes they will offer you something, maybe a free copy of their book once it's published. But you and I know $38,000 is a ridiculous amount to publish a book. I mean, in reality, that could be someone's wages for 6 to 12 months.
Very true. But I suppose in a way it's also a smart marketing tactic. If you think about it, I was just thinking about it when you were saying it, that if somebody's crowdfunding to get the funds to be able to publish and write a book or whatever, wherever the money goes, those people who are contributing are also spreading the word about this book because they've contributed to it. So doesn't that also come down to a marketing tactic, like a smart way of marketing?
Oh, well, that's true, but we don't know where that money is going.
No, we don't.
I mean, $38,000, it could be paying someone's rent and food for the next 6 months or even buying a new car, which I desperately need.
Yeah, me too. But that's, fair point. It's true.
Yeah, so my question is, so why are we funding and supporting one writer when we should be supporting all authors? I mean, who helps us?
We have to help ourselves, I think.
Well, we're in dire trouble. We struggle just as much as everyone else, but it's a question people ask. Like when my book came out, The Last Page, which you've read.
Yes.
Everybody tags everybody else on self-promo day with links to their book. Buy my book, blah, blah, blah. However, Amanda Nelson on Twitter, she hasn't got her book out yet, but she has tagged me so many times as a substitute. And she says, I haven't got a book out yet, but I'm going to promote Shanae Chase's book, The Last Page. And Amanda has read it and she gave me a 5-star review. Thank you, Amanda. It's not just me she tags, but she is an author helping promote other authors' books selflessly.
That's good to hear. Sometimes authors get so wrapped up in themselves, they don't actually help other authors. And I think that comes down to the person that, like you just said, like with Amanda, she does it without expecting anything in return. She doesn't, even though she doesn't have a book published as yet, and she's still on her own journey. She was prepared to put herself out there and help you, which is really rare to come by, especially in my experiences. When I connect with other authors, a lot of the time they're only interested in their own self goals, and in some ways that used to be before Twitter turned into X, I found that I became so snowed under by supporting so many, and not that I expected anybody to lift or help me, but a lot of people did. And I won't say that nobody helped me, because they did, but I found it was more of an inflation of me helping other people. I love genuine people, really. Like, to me, it's sort of it's a rare quality in any person. And to hear that this Amanda, I haven't actually connected with her, to be honest, but to hear that there's people like out there like that is incredible.
Look, I agree. And I had Bambi Sumbers edit one of my books, who was great in helping me identify fragmented sentences. And I did that thing everybody tells you not to do, and I rushed to self-publish it before it was actually ready. So yep. I pulled all my books down and reworked and re-edited them after being mentored by JD. Now, all the mistakes that he picked up on, I am flabbergasted at how I had the nerve to put those books out there when they weren't ready.
But again, that was a learning curve. I think that we all go through that. When I look back on the books that I've written, and I wrote them in such a way that I enjoyed writing, but I still hadn't learned or grown to an extent. It's a joy that is more like a hobby. It's a passion. But when you come to the editing part, it all becomes work. It sort of takes the fun out of it. I know it's a necessary process, but it can become really daunting. And then you need to take a step back for a while because you need to come back to it with a fresh pair of eyes. The mistakes that you couldn't see to begin with, you'll pick up later on. And that's why I think it's important to have the editors and have people you know, even proofreaders, give their criticism. I remember making simple mistakes when I first started to write my books, just little things. But when I was rereading it, initially, I didn't pick up on those mistakes.
And that's the perfect example of writers not realizing that they've made mistakes. And an editor or a proofreader will pick these up.
That's true. I didn't pick up on what I missed. What I like, just even, you know, scenes that were sort of left hanging. And I must admit, I did have a good editor that picked up on that. But every part of what we encounter, I think, as writers and on our journey, I think it helps us along the way. And I think that sometimes we can get to a point where we proofread or proofwrite prematurely. We want to rush to the very end because we see the end product. We can see the star right there when we want to publish it. We want to get it out there. So therefore, we're all guilty of that. I think it's all a learning process, though.
Well, that's true. But that's why I pulled all my books down and rewrote them. And now they are totally different in writing style. The story is still the same, but the writing structure and the pace is so much better for it.
Yeah, but people keep addressing the rules.
Oh, but the funny thing is everyone talks about these rules and what you should and shouldn't do, but I want to know who writes these rules. Are they part of the Ten Commandments? Now, I used many adverbs, but adjectives I used all the time. JD showed me that a stronger power verb gives the story more punch than an adverb or an adjective. So the other day on Facebook, someone put up, "What do you think of my first chapter?" Now, there was a line in there she put, "Forbidden, definitely forbidden." And I said to her, "Well, it's either forbidden or it's not. You don't need both. I would delete the definitely because you don't need it." But this was a way for her to look at her work and say, "Oh, okay, I understand what I wrote was double Dutch, basically." And readers get tired of writers expressing the same thing over and over, that they put your book down and they won't finish it. And I'll be honest and admit, I have read many books where I can't get past the first three pages because of the wordiness and no actual dialogue or action happening.
Yeah, it makes the storyline drag on. I get that.
Yeah, and it's a vocabulary thing. And JD inserted brilliant words because his vocabulary is the best I have ever seen, where I'm always searching for the dictionary or thesaurus to create more power verbs to get rid of the passive voice. But I still find I write in a passive voice because I use a headset. And for me, it's easier to talk as I write and it records on paper, you know, less typing. But sometimes I look back and it has recorded something and I'm thinking, what the hell was I saying there?
But it sounds like an easier way of getting your thoughts to paper. I generally just type rather than use that technique. But in saying that, I think that one thing that somebody helped me a long time ago when I first was very new to Twitter years ago, they actually helped me by saying, and I suppose they did have a point, that you should be able to say anything in a simpler way as well, because people don't want to be sitting with a thesaurus or a dictionary looking up every word. And therefore, you're sort of appealing to a larger market because we all know certain vocabulary words. So we sort of know what they mean without having to look them up. So the way that he put it to me was that if you write it in a simple way and you're still getting your point across, it can appeal to every audience.
Well, that's true as well. And like Joanne Paulson, she actually puts up the word of the day, and I look at it and I'm thinking, what the frig does that mean? And I'm automatically at the dictionary or thesaurus to find out what that word means. But for me, and you know this because when we were writing together, I turned out 3 chapters in one night. Now, of course, we had to edit them, but that's just how my process works. And I actually gave away some of my wisdom the other day.
Wait, you have wisdom?
I did, but I gave it away. I have to get some new. There was this new writer on Twitter, and he was asking about writing processes and what helps you. Mm. Now, you know this, that if I get stuck, I will write 10 question marks, and then I'll highlight it in a different colour, which means that I need to go back and find a new word or rephrase the paragraph of what I was working on.
Right, and you come back to it.
Yeah, so each time I see a colour, I know exactly what I have to change in that sentence or change the word. And he said, oh, great, what a terrific idea. But you also know what I find. It helps me get rid of writer's block because I don't get stuck on that one part. I move on to the next part or the next chapter, and it eliminates the writer's block for me. Because I'm not thinking about what that one word or phrase is that I need to change. Yeah. And I think it comes down to the plotters and the pantsers as well. I mean, are you a plotter or a pantser?
I have the idea in my mind of what I want to say and what I want to write and what I want to express, and then I just sort of go for it. And then as I'm writing, whatever images I see in my mind, I sort of just go with it. And then I'll come back to it at the very end and just go through the whole lot, the whole book. And I don't do chapter by chapter. I just do the whole book and then see what I'm left with at the end.
See, totally opposite styles, but working but working together we managed somehow.
We did. I do book by book because I think that way I can flow. I know what I'm trying to say, and sometimes I have one idea in my mind before I begin, and as I'm writing, something different will appear. So therefore it might change course. So I've sort of let the writing take me on a journey as well.
And that's a good thing. I mean, you wait for the story to develop in your mind and then write it, where I bullet point my chapters and then pants each chapter, and that spot works for me. And I might have to jigsaw it together at the end. And you know what? I apologise to all my editors. I feel sorry for them. But sometimes it gets a bit crazy down here.
But you're also very strategic. And I experienced that firsthand. You strategize, which works for you. You're traditional when you write, and you're good at what you do. And if it works for you, then, well, that's the most important thing as a writer, is to do what works best for you.
And I think what it boils down to is your style and your workability. Now, people have full-time jobs, they have children, they have commitments, and they can't always sit down and write for hours at a time. And for them, stealing an hour at night is it at least keeps them writing. But it could also be the fact that we get stuck because we don't know where our stories are going. But that's okay.
That's true. But I think that sometimes I've experienced that, especially in the very early days when I began writing. The old saying that too many cooks in the kitchen spoil the broth. Sometimes you can get too many people's different opinions or advice, and it can sort of throw you for a loop. It can send you in a different direction. And then it can jumble up your thoughts of where you wanted the story to go. Like I mentioned earlier about the rules, who's to say what rules do you follow and what rules don't you follow? What are the correct ones, and what works for you may not work for another person. But if you take on everybody's opinion on board, then you're going to be jumbled, and because you don't have that clear direction yourself.
It's so true, and it's also coming down to the part of. We have to include every race in the world in our books. I mean, when they did the movie The Hobbit, they introduced Asian and African American elves to make the inclusion of all races.
Right.
Now, this is the difference between movies and books. I mean, where do we draw the line? Like, Snow White was called Snow White because her skin was so fair. Now, I can understand why people might find that discriminating, but that's just how the story was written back in the Stone Ages.
That's true. And if we take away all of that, then we're taking away everything. And I mean, if we're going to be so politically correct, then we're missing something in between. We're not robots, we're human beings. We have a mind, we have freedom of speech, especially in this country. We're able to say what we think and we feel, and I suppose that's where the intent comes. It's where the intent comes from. If there's no intent to be a bigot or to exclude a race, then it shouldn't be an issue. It shouldn't really matter. It all should come down to the intention behind it.
And that's right. It's freedom of speech, of what's in the writer's mind and what they write, is a lot of the time to do with their surroundings or their memories of when they were growing up or different things that has to do with them personally.
That's true. And it's how they see their characters develop and where they see their characters, where their characters come from or where they're headed. We don't see elves running around the street, but they're in our imagination. And that's what we write about. If that's our genre, that's what it should boil down to.
Well, that's true. And the problem also is that we get these trolls online who absolutely slam us for the tiniest little thing we say. Someone a few weeks ago was being attacked by a troll, and I wasn't part of the conversation, but I thought, I'm going to jump in here.
Of course you did.
I know, never ask me twice. But I said, the next thing we're going to have is people not including vegans. I mean, they're not included in any of my books. But then I had someone ask me on Facebook, do you include people who eat dinner in your books? And I said, well, they've got to eat sometimes. I can't write a whole book without them enjoying a meal or going to the bathroom.
Well, that's true. But I think it depends on what you're writing about. I think if it's unnecessary to put in, then you don't. It's sort of like an assumption. We don't really need to put in every bathroom trip or every food in particular, unless it fits into the scene that's in, like, well, in my mind, if that's what the scene's surrounded by, if they're in a kitchen and that's dinner time, then yes, then I think it's important to mention it to give the scene some sort of setting. But other than that, I don't think we need to go into every little detail of, because it's three meals a day. Imagine writing a book where somebody had three meals a day and we wrote everything that they wrote, everything that they ate. How much more difficult are we making our writing? And on top of that, how much more are we really overloading the reader with unnecessary information? I remember I read a few books, you know, especially The Fallen, and it was a series, and I really enjoyed the books that I read. But I found that some of the paragraphs I skipped every now and then because I don't need to know the snippets of the grass. I don't need to know what the grass looks like. I don't need to know the ins and outs of every detail. I think that's what we've moved away from as well traditionally. I think if it fits, then yeah, into the scene, then that's important to mention. It, like, you know, for example, if she's in the bathroom crying, pretending to go to the bathroom or something. But other than that, I don't think if it's not important to put in, then I don't think we need to put it in.
Well, you know, in romance, there are some shower scenes.
So I'm aware of that. That's a bit explicit for me. But you wouldn't find them in every genre either. I think it's what fits into the storyline. It's what the creator has created and wants to put into that story. That's why it's called creative writing, I suppose. It's up to the writer what they feel is fit and what they see or where they feel the story is headed, where the characters are headed, and what personalities of the characters comes into play as well. I mean, if somebody's always crying and all that kind of stuff, then, yeah, I can see the necessity of it. Other than that, I don't think we need to put in every single detail.
You know, I remember reading a book by Barbara Taylor Bradford, and it was three pages of what the room looked like. And I'm like, nobody gives a shit what the room looks like. Unless the crystal paperweight was a murder weapon or had something to do with the storyline. You know, those things bother me. And this is what JD pointed out to me was data dumping. And as I said, I go back and reread these books. And over the years, their writing has changed. And everybody has a different writing style.
Yes, that's true.
Yours is different to mine. And it's quite funny when we were working together trying to combine our two different styles.
It was, but it worked. And I've got to admit that I was out of my comfort zone because I usually write in the first person. I was reading the story through your eyes. So for me, it was really out of my comfort zone, but it actually worked.
Yeah, because you write in the first person and I write in the third person.
Right.
And the one thing JD pointed out to me was that I did a lot of narration and I needed to insert more dialogue. So he showed me how to change my narration into dialogue, and that was a great help. And again, I feel sorry for JD. He must have pulled out every hair on his head while working with me.
But you did it, and you incorporated his lessons and advice, and it worked out well. And that's what you want when you've got somebody that's mentoring you, is that you want to be able to take on board what they're trying to tell you, so therefore you can bring the best out in your work. And that way if you can follow the direction that they're sending you on, then you, at the end product tells the story itself.
Well, that's true. And what I find, though, is if someone asks you something and they don't agree with what you said, it creates a distance. I mean, I swear I've been muted by that many people on Twitter, which I find funny because they either don't respect my opinion or because I'm too honest.
Yeah, but I think it's also because of this day and age. I've been on the back end of this a lot, is that people think because you're behind a screen, you're not a real person. It's like they feel they don't need to show you the same mannerisms as what they would show you if it was face-to-face, or the courtesy they would show you face-to-face. It's sort of like that's sort of gone out the window because we're in such a time where people sit behind computers or phones on social media where they can do mischievous deeds, and if somebody doesn't like it, what somebody says, they simply just press the mute button or the unfriend or the block button. Now, we wouldn't do that in real life. We would show somebody the courtesy of listening or seeing it from their perspective, but that's just not the world we're living in.
Well, that's true, and I find that people's attitudes is so much different to what we expect.
That's true, yes.
So, I mean, why ask the question if you don't want us to be honest?
That's true. But I think sometimes people can misunderstand as well. I remember a while ago on Facebook there was something that was posted and people were giving their honest opinions, but they weren't giving opinions. They were sort of being dogmatic about their opinions, and they have an expectation of what they expect you to follow because they said it. And that wasn't exactly what the person was asking. They got sort of lost in between the actual reason for the question, and then all of a sudden people were telling them, they're just being dogmatic and dictating. So I think that courtesy and that kind of, the lack of courtesy and the dogmatic attitude sort of comes out a little bit in social media as well.
Well, it is, but when people ask my opinion, I give it and I'll say, well, I'll add onto the end of my reply, but that's just me. Everybody is different. But I feel like I'm being forced to write that because people get offended so easily.
Yeah, they do. And they really do.
Now, I have the Mentalist books 1 and 2 coming out this year, and also First Wives Reprisal, which is the one we did together.
Yes, congratulations.
And actually, an agent has asked me to send it to her, and I'm still waiting to hear back.
Well done. Congratulations. I really hope that actually goes in a great direction for you. You've put in so much work.
Now, that's a book that defines women over 50, and it was written for a specific crowd. It's not written for people under 20. It's for people who have actually lived life and gone through the cycles of life. But there's a huge market out there, especially for people over 40 who have lived life, and this book is what these women went through.
Yes.
Now, women actually lived these stories, and they are based on true stories, and is reflected by the woman's side and their circumstances. But you know what? It was so nice to get revenge for them on paper.
Sometimes we can live out our revenge on paper rather than in reality, and it's very therapeutic.
Oh, just the fantasy. I mean, how many ways did we come up to pay these guys back? And we weren't killing them off. We were actually targeting the women who stole the husbands. Or if the man did something horribly wrong to the woman, these women would take their revenge out in a different way. It wasn't a murder, and it's not a murder mystery. It's a romance suspense, and it does have a real good twist at the end.
Yes, it does. It actually really does. And you're right, it wasn't about murder. It was about smart women and their revenge, and it was about hitting these men in the pocket or putting their lives in turmoil the same way that these women had been treated.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm actually working on a sequel to that called Her Reprisal.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's a little bit spicier than First Wife's Reprisal, but it's what the book calls for because revenge is messy.
Yes, it is true, yes.
Now, the next subject I want to touch on is book promoters. I am being slammed on Twitter by book promoters.
Oh, wow.
And you know what? I go in and I look at their bio, as you do before you admit them as a friend. Right. And a lot of them have the same banner, except their photo is changed. And I'm thinking, well, hang on. They can't all have the same promo. Is this a scam or whatever? But I also got a DM, and they're always DMing me, even though I have no DMs to sell me stuff. And this guy said, I've been following your career for quite a while and I'm very interested. So mm-hmm. I looked up his bio and I went back and I said, I don't understand how you could be following my career for a while when you've only joined 2 days ago and you have one follower.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense, does it?
No, and, you know, I'm reading all about these scams and these book promotions. And, look, there are some perfectly wonderful people out there who are true promoters. But right. Is it a way for these people to earn extra money? I mean, what do they actually do? Do they just, you know, you pay them $50 or $100 and they just retweet or post their stuff on Facebook or, you know what I mean?
I think that I don't exactly know because I've never used them myself, to be honest.
Maybe we'll have to get one on and ask them.
Yeah, because I'm just thinking now about all the people that have approached me, and I'll be honest, I don't go through my messages, and I've restricted my messages so much that unless I follow you back, you can't message me, because I, in the very beginning when I started Twitter, I was getting so much inflation of promoters of this, and I couldn't wean out the ones that were for real and the ones that weren't. So I sort of restricted my settings. So I don't get a lot of new people that come on and say, I can do this or do that for you. But thinking back onto the people that did, I don't know if I trust a lot of those sites, because I think I'm a bit cautious in the sense, do they take your money and run? Or do they say what they're going to do? Do they do what they say they're going to do? And how do they go about that? And does it actually work? Is it effective? I haven't seen anybody really where it's been really highly effective and within 12 months they've become, you know, number one on the charts or anything like that. So I'm just not sure. I'm a skeptic.
Yeah, I'm a skeptic too. And I mean, there are some book promoters out there who do a wonderful job, but of course they cost you the same as editors. Like there's people who charge 5 cents a word, and there was one that was recommended to somebody else and I looked them up and for them to actually edit my book, which is like 150,000 words, because I do a lot of subplots in my books, but he wanted to charge me $8,000.
Whoa.
And I'm thinking, I'm not going to make $8,000 off this book yet, but you know, why is he charging me $8,000 when somebody else charges me $1,500 to $2,000 for exactly the same work?
Because I think that I don't think there's like, you know, like if you go to work traditionally, you've got sort of minimum wage, right? I don't think there is any scope on what these people can and can't charge you. I think that they can charge what they feel fit to charge you. And I think that's where it becomes a bit misguided or misleading. But who can afford to pay that out-of-pocket expense straight up? Let's face it, not all writers have got money coming out of the bank left, right and center. It doesn't grow on trees.
Oh, so actually, this guy on Facebook the other day, he wrote, I'm thinking of giving up university and writing full time. Now, can you please tell me, does writing make you rich and can I make a living off it? I replied with a whole line of laughing faces.
Yeah, let's face it, we're all dirt broke. Well, I am anyway.
I mean, he might be a diamond in the rough and he might be a successful writer. But from experience, we know that not everybody is a J.K. Rowling's or an E.L. James, you know,
bank. That's right,
overnight, writer overnight.
That's right, yeah.
So anyway, we talk about next week. Okay. We have David P. Perlmutter, and we'll be discussing his book, Wrong Place, Wrong Time. And let me tell you, he has a fantastic backstory.
I've actually read that book and it was absolutely great.
Yeah, it was. And we'll be discussing that and other things that he's involved in. Now, I hope you have enjoyed our show. And since this was our first show, please be kind. And yes, we are not perfect. And since I'm doing the edit, that probably won't be either.
I know how you love editing, but it's true. We are the rookies from the bookies, and I hope you'll forgive our nerves and stay tuned.
Yeah, and today, excuse me, today we have discussed and exposed a lot about ourselves, but we were introducing ourselves and had no one else to compare the topics to. Now, over the next few weeks, besides our wonderful guests, we'll be discussing the introduction of AI in your books and how it affects your books on Amazon and creating all these things to do with AI. There's been a lot of problems with people writing stories with AI. And not only that, I think Amazon has a problem with any part of AI, whether it's a book cover or whatever, because I know they're going through all their books. And we'll also be discussing another 100 topics on writing. And we'll be answering all your questions, and Katrina will tell you where to send them to.
Okay, so we can be found on Instagram and Twitter and TikTok, all at the same place. It's called The Bookies Podcast, and it's the same name on all social media, so we can be found easily.
So thank you all for joining us. We hope you will hear or see or whatever from you next week. I think it's going to be more of the whatever.
You never know. Looking forward to next week's show. I'll see you then.
So we're going to sign off now, and everybody have a good day.
Join Shanae and Katrina next week for another fun-filled, informative episode of The Bookies.